Community Radio.
It's about real people.
Not sound bites.
Not more talking heads.
Not on this show.
Interchange is a community access media forum fostering unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Conversations that challenge the ways we perceive the world around us.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
Good evening, this is Interchange. My name is Robert Schall. My guest tonight is John Lennemeyer. He's a native of Bloomington, a world-class world traveler, and the author of a fascinating biographical book called How an Average Man Lived an Adventurous Life. Welcome to the program, John.
Thanks.
John, I want you to tell the radio audience about some of the adventures that you've had in your approximately six times around the world. Then in the second segment of the program, I'd like you to focus your adventures, tales of adventures in India.
Well, you're the boss, whatever you like.
Okay. And then in the third segment, I'd like you to tell us something about the lessons you've learned and maybe some advice for would-be travelers. Now, John, you've been around the world a lot, and you've experienced life in over 100 countries. How did you get started in this? What motivated you to go exploring?
Well, let me see. I suppose early children's books about faraway places with strange-sounding names, things like that, and then the first time I went to Europe with my brother, oh my gosh, you know, it just, I didn't think it was possible to have so much fun, you know, just beautiful sights, intellectually interesting things like museums, all kinds of cool people. I mean, it was just end-to-end fun. And so after that, I just, you know, anytime I would get stuck, you know, in some job I didn't want or something, you know, I'd just feel like, well, I don't have to do this. There's fun out there. I could hit the road.
Well, now, John, you've been held up at gunpoint in Guatemala. You were near death from thirst in the Sahara, near death from cold in the Himalayas. You had close calls from lions, elephants, and a rhino. You've seen revolutions, famines, wars, and panty raids.
Oh, yeah, I can't forget that.
Tell me about some of the scares you've had with an elephant.
Well, I'm probably the only Hoosier that has almost been killed by elephants three times. The first time with my old buddy, who's also a Bloomington person who's moved on, Rick Owens, we were climbing Mount Kenya together, and we were about halfway up, and we were going through this area, this bamboo area. And we went around a corner, and there were two elephants right there, you know, maybe, I don't know, 40, 50 feet away from us. And, you know, we all just kind of looked at each other, and the one elephant raised its trunk and took off after us. And so, of course, we were scared to death. We took off running, and yeah, I kept turning around. That elephant was just right on our tail, you know. So I guess that was the first time. Let's see. Another time, this is kind of crazy, it happened in a zoo. But this is not just a regular zoo. This is a zoo in Mali. And I was, you know, kind of walking around the zoo in Bamako, I guess. And just noticed that the fence was sort of beaten down and so forth, and but I didn't really think anything of it, and I was just standing there looking at the elephant, and all of a sudden he sweeps his trunk across, and you know, I had to hit the ground, otherwise he would have just picked me up and, you know, killed me right there. You know, in the zoo. So, you know, it's kind of weird. And then the third time was not very serious, but it was in Mumbai, and I was there was an elephant walk along the road, and I thought I'd get off and, you know, have my picture taken with it or something. And so I asked the guy, you know, how many rupees they charge for that, and you know, I can't remember what it was, 20 rupees or something. But then when I reached in my pocket to get some money out, you know, a couple of hundred rupees fell on the ground, and then, you know, the guy kind of goes, hey, nah, we want more, you know, and he sort of made the elephant threatening signs and stuff, you know, and I says, heck with you, man, I'm not paying this. And my driver, who's been with me many, many years, he sort of pulled me away and threw the guy some money, and, you know, so got me out of that jam. But so that's the third time.
Well, now, it seems to me, reading some of these stories, that you do take chances that the average person would not take, like swimming with sharks.
Yeah, that was dumb. I was just bored, I guess. That plus I'm a great believer in statistics, you know, and nobody gets killed by sharks. It's very, very rare, you know.
So where was this?
In the Persian Gulf. I was working there on an oil platform, and, you know, after about 3 or 4 months, you get pretty bored, you know. So there were these sharks down there, and I thought I'd just go swimming with them.
You're sort of like daring them to do something.
Well, I don't know what it was, but I'll admit that wasn't too bright. But, you know, sure enough, they left me alone.
All right, you've hopped freight trains, you've danced with a 100-year-old woman, 101-year-old woman, you've smoked opium in an opium den. One of the more interesting ones is you met the queen of the Ecuadorian prison system.
Oh, yeah. She was a sweetheart.
And how did you come about to decide to go? You'd heard about her.
Well, I didn't know anything about her specifically.
But you decided to go visit somebody while you were in Ecuador, visit a prisoner.
Yeah, I was in Quito. Incidentally, I've heard that you can't do this in Quito specifically, but, you know, there are a lot of places where you can do it. Just find out where they're, where they have American prisoners, you know, if you're in Bangkok or something like that. And then just go out to the prison and say, yeah, I'm an American citizen.
And you brought chocolate with you? Or?
Oh, yeah, but that was a joke, you know. She, you know, you never know what you're going to see. You know, I was thinking Ecuadorian prison would be like hell on earth, but really her cell was probably nicer in my hotel room. You know, she had it all dolled up and everything, and everything was quite loose. She was selling ice cream out of her cell. You know, who would have guessed all that? But anyway, so yeah, I hung out with her for a little bit, heard her story. It's quite interesting. Yeah, she a lot of Latin American countries, you know, they're great on beauty contests. Oh, God, everybody's got a beauty contest. So even the prison system had a beauty contest. And she was pretty good looking, and she had some hopes of being a Hollywood star before she decided try to smuggle cocaine in her vagina. But anyway, so that didn't work out, so she got 5 years in the slammer for that.
But she won the beauty contest.
Yeah, they had this contest.
That gave her some stature in there.
And she won the contest, so she became the the queen.
So you just go out, you have a way of finding these people, these interesting people. But one of the funniest stories is about people throwing rocks at your van while you were sleeping, and you got angry, and what did you do?
I don't want to make it sound like the world is more dangerous than it is, but you just sort of had to learn certain things, and certain things you do and certain things you don't do. But I was traveling around in this van, this real fancy van in this country. Yeah, I'm not going to name it because I, don't want the people there to feel badly. But I don't know. He gave me a chance to see a mob mentality. The funny thing is, you're there in this van, and things just have a way of progressing, and it happened more than once. First people, crowd around, there gets to be a big crowd, and then they start giggling, then they start laughing, and then, I don't know, they occasionally, you feel a rock and go on the roof, and then bigger rocks, and then they start to, grab hold of the van and start rocking it back and forth. I mean, it's the craziest thing you ever saw. It's mobs taking on a life of their own. It's very peculiar. But so anyway, I could see that, this was going to have to be interrupted, before people got too excited, so I thought, I kind of burst out the door, showed, tried to show my complete contempt for all this goings on, And so somewhere or other, I had the idea, just to show complete contempt, I would go over and take a leak on a tree. So anyway, so I go over to the tree and I unzip and, I'm kind of hanging out there, and all of a sudden I couldn't go. And people are, at first they're kind of speechless, but, after a little bit they start tittering a little, So I'm just going, come on, man, do it, So anyway, I coaxed a little bit out, and then I kind of zipped up,
And that solved the whole change of the whole chemistry.
Yeah. So, problem averted.
I love it. Well, John, we're going to, John Lindemeyer is my guest. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want you to tell us more about some of your adventures in India. Okay?
Sure.
Support for WFHB comes from Bikesmith's Bicycle Shop. Established in 1975, Bikesmith sells Cannondale and Giant bicycles, services all makes, and provides accessories. Open every day, a half block south of the courthouse and a half block east of the B line at 112 South College is where you will find Bikesmith's.
So we're back. This is Interchange. I'm Robert Shull, and my guest this evening is John Lindemeyer. John has been telling us about some of the adventures that he writes about in his book, How an Average Man Lived an Adventurous Life. The book is, by the way, available at the book corner on the southeast corner of the Courthouse Square. John, you make it obvious in the book that India is one of your favorite countries. What's so special about India?
I hardly even know where to begin. For one thing, everything I could say about India, I could say the exact opposite, you know, so it's...
Well, there seems to be quite a variety of different experiences. You know, it's a big country. And
absolutely. It's the most diverse place I've ever been. You know, I think they speak something like 400 languages. The difference between... you know, a taxi driver in Mumbai and yak herder up in the Himalayas. I mean, there's a huge difference, you know, greater difference, you know, and then you'd find in the United States, you know, differences in different kinds of food. You know, all kinds of incredible music, some of the most horrible people in the world and some of the most transcendently incredible people in the world. So just a lot going on there, yeah.
Well, you write about Babaji. How is it you came to meet and know Babaji?
Well, when I came to India, I mean, I've always been, you know, you hear about enlightenment and so forth, and, you know, you hear about people writing about it and so forth, and so it seemed to me that that would be the most important thing a person could discover, you know.
So there was this event that happens every, 17 years that you decided to go pursue?
Yeah, I was, backtrack a little bit. When I came to India, I had decided that I would just basically knock on every door, you know, until I felt like I was in not going anywhere. And you mentioned the Kumbh Mela. It seems like it's every, I can't remember, 13 years or something. I can't remember. But anyway, it's an incredible gathering, someplace about as big as Ellettsville. All of a sudden has 40, 50 million people there next to the
That's
Ganges.
That's astounding.
quite a show. But, actually, I didn't get a chance to see it.
Why not?
Well, I was on this train. I was going there, and this old gentleman got on the train. He just had something about him, you know, a certain presence, you know, a certain loving kindness to him. And I started talking to him, and he asked me a few questions, and I told him I was going to the Kumbh Mela. So he said, well, you can go there. I think it'll really be cool. I'm sure it will be. You know, you can take some great pictures and stuff. But if you want to, I can take you to person. He can reveal God to you.
Now, say that again. I want to make sure everybody understands.
Yeah, he said, well, I can take your person and he'll reveal God to you.
All right.
And so I thought, oh, yeah, this is not the right time for this, you know. I don't feel like getting off this train, you know. I'm getting ready to go to the Kumbh Mela. But I think the only reason I went is because I'd made myself that promise that I was going to, you know, look. You know, I was going to keep looking until I found it. So I went with him, and it's a fairly involved story, but it was true. Crazy.
And so is it Babaji is the guru that he said could reveal God to you? Is that
him? Yes. It's anyway, we went there, and I asked him. I said, I don't defer to anybody, really. I don't treat anybody disrespectfully, but I don't try to kiss anybody's behind either, you know. And so, I was respectful towards him, but just the way I'd be respectful to you, Bob, you know, anybody. And so I said, pardon me, sir, but can you reveal God to me? Will you reveal God to me? And he looked at me and he laughed and he said, yeah, sure. And so, yeah, after a while he did.
And so anybody who wants to read the book and find out what he said, but first you have to take 5 pledges, right?
Yes. I don't know. I'm not here to evangelize.
But it is an interesting story, nevertheless.
You make these pledges, and I don't know, everybody has their own experience. You have to see what your experience is.
But it was a very moving spiritual experience for you.
It was, I have no way of describing it. It just turned the world upside down.
Does this experience have anything to do with the Nirankaris that you write about?
Yeah, the Nirankari. It's a Punjabi word. It means formless.
Formless.
Formless, without form.
Which is another way of saying God.
Yeah, well, if you talk, it's very difficult to talk about something that has no form, no shape, no sex, no taste, no whatever, you know. How can you even describe it? But that's one of its characteristics, is it has no form, yes. But nonetheless, it permeates everything. It's, I don't know, it's kind of you get it or you don't, is what it comes to. Mm-hmm. And when you get it, you just go, holy cow, how could I have missed it? It was here. And I think when you almost die, you certainly get intimations of the fact that, wow, I was here, and now I'm not going to be here. And being here is a big deal. But you just sort of forget it. Since you're here, you think it's a regular thing to be here. But believe me, it's not a regular thing. This moment is magical.
Yeah.
Extraordinary.
You write a great deal about Goa.
About what?
The city of Goa, G-O-A.
Well, it's not a city. It's a province, or what do they call them? I can't remember. It's a state. That's what it is. It's a state. And it used to be, it's probably about as big as Rhode Island, I guess. And it used to be Portuguese, and then I think in 1950 or something, the Indian military came in and kicked the Portuguese military out, and at that point it was Indian. And yeah, it has a very special flavor. It's I'll tell you the truth, it's largely, I don't know, you could say it's spoiled, or you could say it just morphed into something else, but it has definitely changed. But yeah, I've spent a lot of time there. I love it dearly.
And since you've come back and stopped circumnavigating the Earth, you have gone back to India numerous times.
Yeah, actually, we're going back in January.
So you haven't really settled, but you're not as footloose as you used to be.
No, I'm, well, I'm just older. It's, you know, more difficult.
So where do you go?
Well, sort of like to go down to Peru, and I'd like to go to Tibet, too.
No, I mean, you are going to go to India again in January this year.
Yeah, we'll go to the Smargam there, and...
To the what?
Smargam, it's like spiritual wingding, sort of.
Uh-huh.
Be a large number of Nirankaris there.
Where is it? Centrally located, or in the north, or what?
Well, they have the biggest one is normally in Delhi, and that's in late November. But the one I normally go to is in Mumbai. It's almost as big, and it's in the outskirts of Mumbai. And they set up sort of a tent city and so forth. And normally setting the thing up, everybody works voluntarily to do that. And there's what I normally do, there's a big gate, and I work on that gate with my Nirankari brothers there, and we paint. I had a painting business here in Bloomington, and so that's a skill that I know. These days they don't let me get up on the scaffolding, but they find a place on the ground for me to paint, and really just... I don't know, just our love for each other. We just enjoy working together.
And then, do you take any side trips to see? You write. I don't know how close they are together, but you write mention a number of temples. Let's see, where is it? There's a Baha'i temple that's in New Delhi, and one of your favorite things too is a temple somewhere.
No, there are lots of them.
I suppose you can't go very far without, but some of them move you more than others.
Well, let's say move me more than others. Well, great architecture is always moving, Notre Dame is very moving to me.
So what will you do? Okay, you go to this, what did you call it, the gathering of Nirankaris?
And
you're taking four more, another two couples with you, right?
I believe so, yeah. So, we'll have to see. I think we're going to have two couples, actually. Another woman says you might want to come too. I take a lot of pleasure in turning people on to India. I've turned a lot of people on to India. And, there's a few things that it looks threatening, but it isn't. And, you know, maybe there's some bumps. I mean, anybody can go there. There's no real secret to it. But and sometimes I found that I can be helpful to people, you know, tell them, you know, this, that, and the other, turn them on to good taxi drivers. That's very important. And try to talk them into taking trains instead of buses and so forth. You know, a few basic things like that.
So in one of your earlier trips, you spent a lot of time in the northern part near the Himalayas.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, your email address today is HimalayanSP something or other.
At hotmail.com.
So you enjoyed and felt moved by the Himalaya.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could somebody?
And you almost froze to death.
Yeah, I was.
How did that happen?
Well, I was in Nepal. It's on this Jomsom Trek, which maybe 30 years ago or so. And I was having so much fun on the trek, I wanted to sort of take some side trips off of it. And so this German guy and I decided that we would head up to Tilicho Pass, which is... they call it a pass in Nepal, but most of the passes are higher than Mont Blanc. What Mont Blanc is the highest point in Europe, that's 14,700, whereas most of the passes in Himalayas are, you know, 15,000, 16,000, 17,000. So anyway, we were hiking up there, and we'd gotten way up beyond the tree level, and we'd earlier in the day we'd met some of these Tibetan yak herders and just saw them very briefly and didn't think too much of it. And then it was about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we got up to Tilicho Pass, and it started snowing a little bit, and I didn't think too much of that, but, you know, then pretty soon it covered the path, and all of a sudden we realized, well, how are we going to get back down if we didn't know the path? So that began to be quite a problem, and... we made our way down, and then we got stuck in this fog, and it started getting really cold, and started getting frostbite, and
you realized you're in deep doo-doo.
yeah, serious situation.
And, but?
Then, oh boy, here we go, then the clouds parted, and we saw... This tent with these Tibetan yak herders, and then we realized they were about 1,000 feet below us, and we were going to be able to get down there, and they took us in, and oh my God, they were, it was such an experience to spend 24 hours with people that were either laughing or smiling the entire time. I mean, to be in the company of people like that, whoo, it's amazing. It's marvelous. So they saved us, yeah.
Yeah, that's neat. John Lennemeyer is my guest. We're going to take a short break here. When we come back, John, I'd like you to tell us what your travels have taught you and if you have any advice for would-be travelers.
Support for WFHB comes from the Friday Folk Acoustic Concert Series. Proud to welcome the real Michael Kelsey to Bloomington for a show at 8 p.m. this Friday, November 30th at the Monroe County History Center. Not to be confused with the radio hologram who calls himself Mike Kelsey, the real Mike Kelsey hails from Lafayette, Indiana, and is widely recognized as one of the nation's top guitar virtuosos. That's musician Michael Kelsey performing this Friday at 8 p.m. at the Monroe County History Center. We're back. This is Interchange. My name is Robert Shull. My guest is John Lennemeyer. John has been telling us about some of the adventures that he writes about in his book, How an Average Man Lived an Adventurous Life. The book is available in the book corner on the southeast corner of the square.
Yeah, that's a nice place to buy. It's local guys, and they're nice people.
It's a fascinating book. It's written in very short little stories and entries. The average is about 2 pages long. It's so readable. You can just pick it up and take, you know, you got a few minutes, you just read another couple of stories. They're all quite amusing. And let's see, John, are there any lessons you've learned from your adventures? Do you have any advice to other listeners who might get the urge to go on an adventure?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm just trying to think of things that they might not normally think about.
Would you advise him to stay home?
No, Lord, no. St. Augustine said that the world is a book, and people that don't travel only read one page. I think there's some truth to that. Okay, advice. One piece of advice that I think most people wouldn't realize is extremely important is if you want to be treated well when you go to a foreign country, well, go someplace that's like your military ally, you know, go to Germany or England or France or one of those places. But if you want to be treated super well, you know, like royalty, then you ought to go someplace that you've been told is supposed to be your enemy. You know, and you go to a place like that, and I'm telling you, they'll treat you like a king. You know, if you say if... I don't know who's supposed to be our enemy now. Iran, let's say Iran. I can promise you, if you went to Iran and just bumped around a little bit, you would be invited to dinner 20 times in a day, and I'm not exaggerating. That's just a simple truth. This thing about fraternizing with the enemy, well, there's a reason. Because once you get to know them and they get to know you, you're no longer enemies. I went back to Vietnam and met these people that were trying like the Dickens to kill me, and I was trying to kill them too. And boy, that was heartwarming, experiences I had there. Can I tell one story?
This yes, please
is a,
do.
This is a really cool story. This was a guy that I'd met that had been injured three times, and he'd been in a B-52 carpet bombing, which, you know, we've, Americans have only seen one side of that. We haven't been carpet bombed. And boy, everybody that has, boy, it's...
So what happened?
No. So anyway, I went back to this guy's apartment, and I don't normally drink, but you know, what the heck. We knocked back a few, and he started talking to my translator, and they started laughing, you know, and I said, well, what's going on? And so he told me this story. He, it's very important for them to stay out of sight during the war. You know, they would only normally travel at night, and if they traveled in the day, they would try to stay undercover. But there was one time when this guy was just unable to stay undercover, and he was crossing a river, and he was on a sandbar, and this American chopper came up behind him up the river. And, yeah, and they just had him. That's all there was to it. So they started, the door gunners started firing behind him, and he'd run over to one side of the sandbar, and then he would shoot a little ahead of him, and he'd have to run back the other side of the sandbar. And so he did that for a little bit, and the guy just got pissed, you know. He said, look, I'm not going to die like this. So he turned around, and he looked up at the American helicopter pilot, and he just gave him a mock salute, you know. And the American helicopter pilot looked right back at him. He saluted back, and then he peeled off down the river. And that's just the way it is, you know. When you meet... make that kind of human contact with another person, then you don't want to kill them. I mean, the stuff that happened to me over there would just bring tears to my eyes thinking about it. So that would be my first bit of advice. The second bit of advice would be... the big secret about traveling and about having adventures, and the big secret is just do it. You know, just dream up something, and it's extremely important that you research it enough to make sure that it's actually doable. You know, there are some things you know, you want to walk across Afghanistan, don't do it, man. You'll get killed. You know, you want to ride a horse all the way through Mexico, don't do it. They'll kill you. So there's some things that are not doable, but most things are, you know. All you have to do is just
I would have thought that crossing the Sahara Desert would have been very dangerous, but you did it three times.
Well, actually, these days I think it actually would be quite dangerous. There are a lot of parts of Africa that are more dangerous than they were when I was there. There's a lot of violence and so forth going on there. But research it a little bit. You know, that some places are dangerous and others aren't. And there's some, like New York City, that, you know, there's some things you do and some things you don't do. And...
So having good contacts over there, somebody you rely
on. You have to talk to people, say, you know, is this dangerous? Is this a dangerous neighborhood? or, you know, what should I do, and so forth. They'll tell you.
Well, now, I'm going to criticize you a little bit here. You claim to be an average man, John. You say, I'm not the kind of person who men automatically defer to. I don't usually make women's hearts beat faster when they see me across a crowded room. Well, that's one definition of an average man, but I think you're a very remarkable person with a gift for adventure, a gift for seeing beauty in places that other people would miss, a gift for getting total strangers to take you into their lives, to trust you.
Well, that's
Maybe it's something you've developed, but...
Yeah, that's exactly right. You develop it. You know, you you start out with some kind of adventure. For example, if you went to... Every Sunday you went to a different church in Bloomington, you'd have adventures. I'm telling you. You know, go to a mosque, go to a synagogue, go to a Quaker church, go to a black church. You know, things will happen to you. Just get in the habit of doing those things, and after a while, it'll seem natural.
There's a certain amount of audacity. When you went to meet Babaji, the man who claimed he could reveal God to you, you were in a crowd. There were a lot of people. But you spoke up. I forget what it is you said that caused him to take you aside and give you his full attention.
Well, actually, that's not quite exactly the situation. It was people were going up. There was maybe a line about half a mile long, and people would just go up and they'd put their head on his foot. And so it just, when it came up to my, when I came up there, I asked him a question. So I guess that's audacious. I don't know.
But yeah. He gave you his full attention then, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, people are people.
I was also interested in your upbringing, your home life here, and you are one of three Lindemeyer boys. You have three brothers, all younger than yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And you apparently have a really good relationship with them. I know in the acknowledgement sections of the book, you say, as for my three brothers, Al, Richard, and Phil, you guys suck, and you have tiny weenies.
Yeah.
That's the kind of humor and relationship you have.
In the acknowledgement of my second book, which I'm right now, I'm going to say that I was only joking, and they were all hung like bulls.
What's the
patch that up a little bit?
What's the nature of your second book?
It's going to be a novel, and I think that'll allow me to. In the first book, I wrote that I wasn't going to tell everything. It was going to be sort of like the bikini, you know, what you write about or what you tell about or what you can see is interesting, but you know, what you don't see is maybe more interesting. So
you may tell all this time.
Well, I didn't say that. Some is fiction and some isn't fiction, but yes, more
okay,
will be revealed.
You can get away with a lot by writing fiction that's
more,
based
yeah,
on...
Yeah, because it's fiction. That's right. And, so that's been sort of fun.
Okay, and have you got the discipline to work on it daily?
I was working on it today. It does take that sort of... it's like everything. you know, you have a certain objective, you know, and then you wake up every day and you try to do a little bit of what will move you towards that objective, and yeah, after a while, it gets done, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Part of the book that is really interesting, you said that you started making a list of the best things in the world, and you have about 19 sections of the book, one and two page sections that list some of the best things. I picked out a couple that I thought were pretty interesting. The lotus-shaped Baha'i Temple in New Delhi, the museum at Checkpoint Charlie in Berlin, and this one's kind of interesting, hearing the Indy 500 start with the words, "Gentlemen," and for the first time in the history of the Indianapolis 500, "Lady, start your engines." So,
yeah, that was a moment, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then the last one here, I've got the first time I actually heard a French girl say, "Ooh la la."
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you...
You're married, and you've been married one or two times before. Have they all always been American women, or did you bring one home from parts afar?
No, they've all been homegrown tomatoes.
Yeah.
Just by chance, really. Yeah, of course, that's one of the... It's one of the interesting things about traveling.
Was it your first wife that you took off with a one-year-old child? What was his name, Jacques?
Jacques, yes.
And it took 7.5 years before you actually got back to Bloomington?
Yeah, 6.5. First time I traveled around the world, it took about 3.5 years, and the second time was 6.5, and we went much slower. You know, kids don't like to move quite so much.
Yeah, yeah.
But they were both totally doable, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to recommend anybody who likes adventures and maybe even has the yen to go out and see different cultures, I highly recommend that you get a hold of the copy of this book. Or is the title of the book? How an Average Man Lived an Adventurous Life. And it's really fun reading. And once again, it is available from the Book Corner. And we eagerly await the arrival. You got a name for your new your novel?
Yeah, I think it's called Deep Mysteries and Unpopular Ideas. So,
Deep Mysteries?
Yes, it's called Conversations with Augie Ballantyne and His Rowdy Friends, colon, and then Deep Mysteries and Unpopular Ideas.
All right, sounds fascinating. We'll look forward to it. Any last words?
Yeah, this has been an adventure, too. It's great, very enjoyable. And WFHB was...
Was one of your...
Was Liz's one of the best things in the world. Well, there you go, man.
Well, we certainly appreciate that. Thank you to our assistant producer, Shane Young, for engineering tonight's program. Interchange is produced by Louis Malone. And the executive producer is Alison Bektesh. The original theme music by Jamil Ephraim. Stay tuned now for Stardust coming up next on WFHB.
Real people.
Real issues.
This is your forum.
This is Interchange.
written and produced entirely by volunteers working in the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Interchange fosters unfiltered open dialogue on the people, issues, and events impacting life in South Central Indiana and beyond.
Comments, suggestions, and program ideas may be sent directly to the Interchange staff.
The email address is news@wfhb.org.
That address once again is news@wfhb.org.